Good day and welcome. This is Dr. Rita Marie Voscalzo, and we are here for our Institute of Nutritional Endocrinology monthly office hours call. This is a call that's open to members of all of our programs. People who are actively going through the insulin resistance program right now, folks that are still going through our clinical mastery of the digestive system, and those who are in for the long haul and in our nutritional endocrinology practitioner training. So welcome. If this is your very first call with us, thank you so very much for being here. Let me give you just a little bit of a rundown on how we usually run these calls. You have the ability to submit calls in questions in advance if you cannot make it, and we do have two people who did that today, so I'll go through those questions. You have the ability to type questions into the Q&A or to the chat. We have, right now, there's two chats open because we had been using Join Me as a chat so that there can be conversations back and forth throughout the call. But it looks like it's been stable for a while. The Instant Teleseminar one is now working. So right now we have both of them open, but we'll just choose to use the Instant Teleseminar one. And if we need to, you can click the link that was in your email that said Join Me for chat. But it's easier since it's all on one page. One-stop shopping is what I prefer. And then third way is to raise your hand. My favorite way is when I get to actually talk to you in person and we get to go through your cases, your clients, your questions, whatever comes up for you. These are calls where you can come and ask questions. You can get coaching, ask questions about lab tests for some of your clients. And you can also share successes. So it's a good way for us to just stay connected as a community. So I do have a hand up with Tony, and I'm not sure if that's still up from, because I thought I put all the hands down that said they could hear me. But I will check, and if Tony has a question, then I'm going to go ahead and answer it. And if not, then what I'm going to do is go ahead and do the questions that have been typed in advance, and then we'll move to the other questions. So it looks like Jamie also has his hand up. So I'll start with Tony.
Hello, everyone. I actually do not have a question. That's just my raised hand from the text earlier.
You must have been slow on the draw, girl, because I put all the others down, and yours was still there, so I just assumed that you had a question.
No worries.
Great.
But, you know,
right.
The call is still early. I may have one later.
Okay, good. Yes. Yeah, it's funny how those questions come up as we talk about other people's situations, and it sparks questions. So I love these calls. Thank you, Tony.
You're welcome.
So Jamie, all the way from London. Howdy, Jamie.
Hi, Rita Marie. Can you hear me?
I can hear you perfectly.
How was the retreat? Sorry, I couldn't make it.
Well, it was great.
I saw some of the photos and everything. It looked
It was transformational, educational, and relaxing, all of the above. It was very good.
Brilliant. I'm hoping to get out to Shine, so hopefully I will come out in October. That'll be good to get out there. I just wanted to share a couple of labs with you, if possible. Am I able to do a screen share with you on Join Me?
Yeah, you can do a screen share. That's the reason for having Join Me, was the screen share. That's right.
Exactly.
Yes, you can. So... Oh, I have to unlock everybody, which I did. So let me just give the past presenter role to Jamie. So for those of you who are new to these calls, and for those of you who are in IRSPT, some of the stuff is going to be not necessarily the insulin resistance, but it's a great way for you to learn other things. So Jamie has the presenter role now. And so if you click that link in your email that says Join Me, then you'll be able to see his screen as he shows some labs and he and I talk about them. So it's a great way to learn stuff. So you should get the little message that says, yes, I'm willing to share my screen or something like that. There you go.
Okay. There we go.
Yep.
Very good. Right. Okay. So this is, unfortunately, it's still got the name up, so I haven't covered up the name, unfortunately. But this is a postmenopausal female. I've just had a consultation with her, and it's a question really about her hormones and the best way to go about supporting her hormones. I've got blood test results as well to go alongside the Dutch test. So I just wanted to sort of get your feedback on how you would go about supporting it. She's keen to support her hormones and get them up, and she feels good taking pregnenolone, DHEA. My concern is her low cortisol level, but I'm just keen to sort of hear how you would go about this if this sort of client came to you.
If you, so she is already on DHEA pregnenolone, or you are, she's open to doing it. She's open to doing it.
She's taken it in the past, yeah.
She has in the past. Okay.
She wants to look at different options, whether she does it through, she's happy to do it with botanicals and herbs, or to do it through bioidenticals.
Through bioidenticals.
She doesn't want to go there. Synthetic test, you know, hormone route, which obviously I would recommend not going down as far.
Well, if she can avoid it, right. I mean, it's just more messy when you have to get prescriptions and, you know, deal with doctors who may not know how to read these tests and don't want to actually change things accordingly. So her estrone, her estradiol, her estriol, and how old is she?
DOB 59.
She's actually 50. Oh, she's in her late 50s, yeah.
She's 56.
Okay, so she's 56, and she's been menopausal for how long? Do you know?
About 8 years, I believe.
Okay. Did you calculate her estrogen quotient? Because that's the one thing I wish they calculated. They make me pull out a calculator every time.
No, I haven't, but I can easily do it now. Hold on a second.
Okay. For those of you who don't know what an estrogen quotient is, there should be a specific ratio between estriol, estradiol, and estrone, and estriol should be the heftiest. That's the safest one. That's the protective one. And the ratio is what? E3 divided by E1 plus E2.
So the ratio is 0.65.
0.65. Okay, so we want that ratio to be above 1, so she's low in estriol. She's low in everything, but she's considerably lower proportionally in the estriol. Oftentimes, when they're low in estriol, it indicates that there's an iodine deficiency. So you want to be looking at the iodine. If you're not comfortable just having her do some sea vegetables or iodine, then make sure you do an iodine load test to verify. But I would say this is a functional test, and I personally think this might be a little more accurate to go on than an iodine load. So if I see somebody with the low, then I'm feeling comfortable with it, unless, you know, they have blatant Hashimoto's, and you have to be careful. But
yeah, I've tested her antibodies. She doesn't have race antibodies, so
okay. Yeah, so
I'm always
very cautious
with race antibodies.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you don't have to always be. It's just there is some literature that says that excess iodine, not normal iodine, but excess iodine can be problematic for Hashimoto's. What a lot of practitioners interpret that is that iodine is problematic for Hashimoto's. Yeah. And that's a whole lot of unnecessary fear that can hurt people because you can't make thyroid hormone without iodine, obviously. So I would be looking at iodine levels. And if she was going to do replacement, there is a possibility. I don't know how it is over in England, but estriol is available in a cream. Bezwecken sells it, as well as some other companies. So you could look at like a labial cream for estriol. Mm-hmm. Likely with low estriol like that, she has vaginal dryness or painful intercourse or things like that, which is common, not necessarily all the time, but applying an estriol either labially or even intravaginally can be very helpful, and it's a good way to get it absorbed because it will get absorbed best through mucosal membrane.
Is that your preferred route of administration? Vaginally?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. In fact, for all of the hormones that you're going to do, estrogens, I don't ever recommend orally. There might be some rare cases just because the literature does not support the safety of oral supplementation with estrogen, but mucous membrane tends to be the way that you can get away with the smallest possible dose. When you do skin, the skin becomes resistant to it after a while, and you just don't get as much in. But when you use mucous membranes, vaginally, even anal mucosa, I have someone who applies it to the anal mucosa as well, and it just doesn't develop that resistance after a while that the skin does. So that's
sure.
That's a good possibility, easy to get estriol cream. Even, I think, suppositories. The Zwecken used to have suppositories. The last time I tried to find them, they were not as easy to find.
When I was doing some research on it, I can show you actually one of the – this is what I was looking at. It's called Estro Progenza Cream. So it's a combination of estriol and progesterone.
Mm-hmm.
So it has 0.75 milligrams of estriol and 20 milligrams of progesterone.
Yeah. That could be helpful, too. Yep, absolutely. And also, I don't know if she's shipping it overseas yet, but Dr. Anna Kabeka, she spoke on one of our calls a while back. She is got a new cream that's got DHEA and estriol, and she
okay.
calls it a vulva cosmetic because as soon as you put DHEA in there and you recommend it as a supplement, you get in trouble. So basically,
sure.
it's something – it's
We yes. have stupid regulations in the UK with DHEA. I mean, the practitioner sites will sell it, but they're not allowed to be seen selling it, so they don't market it on the websites. So you have to phone up and put a special request in.
Right.
They're not allowed to import it. It's all very, very complicated with DHEA in the UK.
It's very complicated in Canada. Even people have been caught smuggling it across the border into Canada. So anyway, it's a lot safer than Tylenol and other things like that that are sold over the counter. So anyway, so that's one of the things I would be looking at. So that's to the estrogens. So all of them are low. You can, and your whole point about giving pregnenolone and DHA would be a starting point as opposed to trying to get into the right, you know, 80-20 kind of combinations and not knowing, you know, playing around with that to get that right. And it requires prescription. So I would say going with precursors is a good starting point. She's extremely, let's see, where's her numbers? Oh, this is just the normals. Okay, look, estrone is 4.5. Yeah, she's really, really low. So I think
the normal ranges, these aren't postmenopausal ranges. So the postmenopausal ranges are down the bottom.
Oh, down below, yes, right. So 1.3, and she's got 4.5. So actually, that's not too bad.
Yeah.
That's right. Because I forget, because Meridian will usually put the range for where they're at, I think. Anyway, estradiol
okay.
is 0.7, and she's 0.2, so she's in that range. 3.4, yeah, so she's in their ranges, but I would be concerned about the estriol bringing it in up into proportion. Adrenal-wise, so I'm looking, hers is the red, yeah, wow. She's,
you want me to blow it up?
Yeah, no, I see it now. Yes, so hers is the red, so her adrenals are low, although they do follow the normal curve except for bedtime. She probably has trouble sleeping, my guess would be.
She does a lot of traveling in, you know, different time zones. She's an investment banker, so she's, you know, she's pretty highly stressed job that she has.
Right. So, you know, it's possible that you could try some things like phosphatidylserine or magnolia at bedtime. You just want to make sure that that doesn't lower the cortisol even further in the morning. But, you know, certainly if she's traveling a lot, melatonin or 5-HTP and B6 to support melatonin synthesis could be helpful as well. Let's see. So, you know, as far as this is concerned, yeah, I mean, I think that going with our standard approach with DHEA and pregnenolone would be helpful, you know, a stage 3. Clearly, this is a stage 3 adrenal fatigue.
Yeah.
So I would go with that, and you might look at, you know, any of whatever your favorite adaptogenic type things would be. But I would go with the stage 3 recommendations for the DHEA and the pregnenolone.
So what are the dosing recommendations for stage 2? To be honest, I haven't played around much with bioidentical symptoms.
Yeah. So I, you know, using the liquids is, I like to use the BioHealth liquid ones just because you can so carefully titrate them. Don't know if they're available over there, but something along those lines. But with DHEA, I usually do, in stage 3, I want to be careful not to do too much DHEA because DHEA can bring the cortisol down even more. So I would probably go to, like, maybe one, start with one drop 3 times a day or twice a day and increase to 3 times. I like to do it 3 times a day. I like to kind of mimic the body cycle, so I don't want to give high doses of DHEA. I see people giving 25 to 50 milligrams, and I think that's
wrong. She's taking 25 milligrams, and I was cautioning her about that because I said it just doesn't mimic the natural response.
It doesn't mimic it, and the danger is the body works hormonally, and in just about every hormone, it works on the negative feedback, right? So the levels go down, then the body tries to create more. The levels go up, the body says, oh, forget it, I don't need to make any. So it shuts down her natural amount. So I would start with the one to three drops, 2 to 3 times a day would be the range, and you can start low and work your way up. She's already doing the 25, so you may actually start at the higher just because she may have withdrawals from it.
Mm-hmm.
Because she might have been depressed.
Well, the thing is, she goes on and off it. So one to three drops, 2 to 3 times a day.
Yes. And each drop is 1.2 milligrams. So you're talking, anywhere from like 1.2 to 3.6, 3 times a day. So you're talking less than 10 total for the day.
Yeah.
When you get in higher, that high level of DHEA can be suppressing her cortisol.
Yeah, absolutely.
And so you don't want to do that. So then you want to do things to help stimulate the cortisol. You want to look at, does she have any blood pressure issues?
She does have low blood pressure, yeah.
She's low, perfect. Then she's a good candidate for licorice. But giving her the precaution that, hey, this tastes good. If you like it and, you feel like you get a buzz from it or you get some energy from it, be careful. Watch for simple things like, ankles starting to swell and things like that. It wouldn't happen quickly if she stays with a conservative dose, but I experimented with it once and I was doing 3 droppers 3 times a day, and within 2 weeks, I went from hypotensive to hypertensive. So it can happen quickly if you overdose. So start her with a normal, whatever particular brand you get, whatever their range of recommendations is, you can certainly stay within that range.
I think BioHealth also have.
BioHealth has an awesome one, and theirs is very potent. And theirs is the one I was doing 3 droppers 3 times a day, and most people do 3 drops 3 times a day. But generally, the dose is between, 5 and 10 drops, but I've had people get really good stimulation and good increased energy and see good results with 1 to 3 drops 3 times a day. So it's just going to be how sensitive she is to where you want to go with that.
Sure. Okay.
And then whatever your favorite adaptogens are, if she has any thyroid issues, I certainly would look at ashwagandha. If she has any issues with stamina and endurance, I would look at cordyceps, things like that.
Okay. And the pregnenolone, would you also recommend the pregnenolone?
Yes. Oh, yes. So the pregnenolone I would recommend, and I love doing pregnenolone because the body gets to choose. It gets to choose which pathway it wants to send it down. I would generally...
You tend to prime the pathway. So would you bring them in at different times? Would you start with the DHEA and then phase in the other ones, or would you start with all of them at the same time? Do you have a preference for that?
I haven't played with it too much. I usually have people do both. If people have history of breast cancer or their DHEA is not showing low, I'll start them with just the pregnenolone. I've had people who are very sensitive, so we just start with one or the other. But I would say if you want to start, the most conservative approach is to start with the pregnenolone because that's giving the body that precursor, and then you can add the DHEA. But she's already on DHEA.
Yeah.
So I don't know that I would want to take her off completely to just do it that way. So I would probably give her both, given that her estrogens are low. And the pregnenolone, usually for stage 3, I'm looking at probably 12 to 15 drops 3 times a day.
Okay.
Which is, again, the 1.2. So it's much lower than the typical 100 milligram dose that you see people taking. But again, I would look at, how's her cholesterol.
Cholesterol's high. I'll show you her bloods because there's some quite interesting stuff going on with
it.
She's got a family of hypercholesterolemia.
Okay. So whenever I see high cholesterol with low sex hormones, I'm thinking conversion, and you want to make sure you're giving her plenty of B5 because it's an important cofactor for converting.
Yeah. Okay.
And I usually go with 500 times 3, which is very high dose of B5, but the studies show that that's a really good dose for helping to move this pathway. And then you might see not only will her sex hormones come up, but her cholesterol going down.
Okay. Very good. That's a new one for me. Thank you.
Good. Yeah.
And
anything else in here? Go back to her progesterone. Let's see, on the first page, her preg. So these two are progesterone metabolites, and they're low as well. Let's see what their pregnenolone postmenopausal, 5 to 34, and she's at 81. Okay. And 23, 28. So I'd have to look at that pathway, but the pregnenol dial is higher than the postmenopausal range, but the the beta and then the alpha is lower. So we'd have to look at the pathway.
It's a bit confusing, actually, because they've rotated them. So they put the beta pathway on the top here and the beta pathway on the bottom here.
Oh, okay. I was looking wrong. Okay.
I know. I did the same. That's why I brought it up. So the 81 is actually, both of them are in the range.
Both of them are in the range. Yeah. So I don't think it'd hurt her to get that estriol cream, but I wouldn't specifically be looking to address the progesterone other than if you're going to get her that estriol cream.
Okay.
Testosterone.
And if you were giving estriol, you wouldn't give it unopposed, you'd give it with progesterone, would you?
I'm not concerned about giving estriol unopposed. I'm very concerned about giving estradiol or estrone unopposed. So estriol, okay. I would give it unopposed, not problematic, but I think they work well together, so it wouldn't be a problem. And her numbers aren't like out of range high that I would be concerned. And there's not a lot of problem. Even if she was in the premenopausal range for progesterone, that's not going to be a problem.
Okay. Very good. And all of these hormones, the DHEA, the pregnenolone, can you get these in a transdermal form as well? Could you apply these? Would there be any advantage to applying these vaginally or mucosally rather than in drop forms?
Well, they're hard to get. The doses are lower, and I don't know exactly how the dosing works, but DHA is usually prescription to get it transdermally.
Okay.
I know that Anacobecus does have both estriol and DHA plus some other herbs, and that's meant to be applied vulva, as a vulva cosmetic, we'll say.
Mm-hmm.
I think that the sublinguals do get absorbed real well. Some people don't like them because they burn a little bit. They're very strong, but there's just a couple of drops that you're taking at a time. And so you can do them, certainly you can do them cream, but I don't like skin. I prefer mucous membrane.
Okay. And you would start personally, would you, with this client, you would go down the bioidentical hormone route rather than trying to do it with botanicals? In isolation.
Given the estriol, I'd want to get that estriol in balance right away.
Yeah,
and if she's symptomatic, for sure, I think it's just going to speed it up. Certainly, you can just go the botanical route and not do the pregnenolone or DHEA. She's already been doing the DHEA, so again, I'd feel bad about withdrawing her because she, if she's been suppressing it, it's going to be problematic to just take it away.
Okay.
Her body's to making it. Go to the next page so I can see her DHEA and her testosterone. Okay, there we go. And her melatonin is low, so you could do either the melatonin itself or 5-HTP. I always like to start with 5-HTP and B6.
Yeah,
as
I agree. Yeah.
Melatonin, So her DHA for sure is lowish. Okay, let's look at her 5-alpha versus. Okay, so
it's
yes,
pretty balanced.
Yeah, it's balanced. That's good. I have our NEPT clinical pearl for this week. It talks about the DHT and alpha versus beta. So, okay. So far, and then testosterone, is that on the next page?
Testosterone's here.
Oh, okay. I didn't see it listed on this sheet. Okay. Where are... Okay, 2.8. Yeah.
Testosterone is, in terms of the list or on the graph?
Yeah, in terms of the list, but the graph's fine too. I was just looking at the list initially.
It's on the previous page, I think.
I missed it. Okay.
Let me scroll back. Hold on. It is here. Androgen metabolism. It is here. Down here. It's...
Oh, right, staring me in the face. So DHT, the DHT is of a concern. You don't want that to be high. That's at the low end of range. Her testosterone is below range. So given testosterone is below range and 5, the DHT is at the low end of range, there might be a little overconversion of testosterone to DHT. That's where I would go with it. Because you can always, DHEA is precursor to testosterone, so if she's got enough of that, the body can make the testosterone. And then, of course, you know, stress management techniques, the diet, the gluten-free, the, you know, all the other stuff that you know about.
Okay.
Okay.
Absolutely. Can I just show you her bloods as well, just to go alongside it? Is that okay?
Sure.
So these are her bloods. This might be a bit confusing to you because this is my own matrix that I use, but basically this is her, the first column is her previous results and the second column is her current results. And then I've got functional ranges
and
that
lab.
I use.
Oh yeah, that's good.
But again, the functional ranges are slightly, they might be slightly different to what you're used to seeing. But the, you know, the main things that have jumped up on this test, obviously her sodium potassium levels have both come up
related
significantly.
To her adrenals, yeah. How old was the previous? Is that a recent previous or a couple of years previous?
No. It's probably about 4 months ago previous.
Okay. So you got to work on her zinc. Look at her alk-phos.
Yeah.
And
yep.
That's really low. Her ferritin is low.
Yeah, I mean, her ferritin has come down
quite a lot. Her ferritin is good. Yeah. It's better than it was anyway.
One thing I wanted to ask you about on here was a pattern I was looking for with her elevated potassium, creatine kinase, LDH, all of these things. What would you be thinking here? Would you be thinking of some sort of muscle breakdown or muscle degradation? I was trying to work out why we're seeing all these, all of a sudden, increase.
Yeah, I know. I don't know enough about what happened, you know, between the 4 months ago and now. What has she done differently? Has she changed her diet? Has she decreased protein intake? Does she have any stomach acid stuff?
I mean, her chloride's come up quite a lot, which I was quite pleased to see because we were helping support her digestion. That was one of the things we were doing and getting her homocysteine down. There are a few things that we were working on her lipids. You know, there are a few things.
Triglyceride, HDL ratio is surprisingly good. Why is her HDL so high, though? I would be concerned, you know, it may not be an issue, but it may indicate that there's some inflammation going on. Oh, yeah, because they're all high. Wow, the whole thing. Did you do CRP? And that's low, okay?
Yeah.
But homocysteine was high. So I continue to support that homocysteine to try to get it down, you know, around 6-ish. But this may help, but she probably has, you know, if she's doing a really good diet, she's really being conscientious, she could have familial hypercholesterolemia, which you're always battling with, right? So, but it's definitely a good improvement that you've seen.
Yeah.
For sure. You know, even the HDLs have come up and the LDAs have come down. So it's more significant. The ratio is much, much better. So I just keep doing what you're doing and add this component to it and see if you can help her cholesterol convert more into the sex hormone pathways.
And the other thing I was a little bit confused with her red blood cell, her full blood count or complete blood count, her red blood cells, her hemoglobin, hematocrit, all low. Her iron status is obviously good that we can see from her iron panel. I've tried to rule out copper anemia as well because this is something I was thinking. Copper levels, if anything, is slightly on the higher end of the functional range. What typically causes it to be low? Would you be looking at a B sort of folate, B12, maybe B6?
You could look at that, but that would typically not put it low for sure, but B6, because I'm not seeing the iron, the serum iron a lot. Oh, there it is. Iron serum is decent, but it's not getting converted into hemoglobin. Her ferritin is high, not getting converted into hemoglobin. I'm thinking B6.
Okay.
So I would add B5, B6. B6 also supports that. We talked about that for her melatonin anyway.
On the lower end.
I would look at B6. Yeah, I would look at B6, B6, zinc, and B5, making sure you got, you know, the vitamin C in there. And, of course, definitely with that homocysteine.
I'm giving you a formulation for that.
Yeah. But she just made me more B6 than in that formulation, you know, maybe P5P if you're not already giving her P5P.
Yeah. And, P5P is actually in this formulation for this. And her free T3's come up fairly significantly.
That's great.
And then lastly, her hormones in the blood. One thing that I'm not that familiar with is the functional ranges for postmenopausal women.
Yeah.
Do you have functional ranges for
You can look in the spreadsheet in the Master Health Tracker to see if they have functional ranges. I don't know. And also in the blood chem software. It's pretty much the same.
The same as this. Yeah.
What about the blood chem software? Did you look at that before
same.
They took it away? It's the same, yeah. So I don't know of any other ranges. I don't use the blood all that much. I just kind of use it as a comparative, but I usually like to look at the Dutch or saliva.
Okay.
So you're not measuring hormones that much.
But she's got elevated sex hormone binding globulin.
Yes, she has, yeah.
Something recently, now I'm drawing a blank, that I was like, oh, I got to make a note to look at that, of why sex hormone binding globulin would be elevated. But, yeah, that's going to tie up. So even if her numbers look good in the blood, they're going to be different from what you're seeing, because they're measuring the free fraction in the Dutch, right?
Yeah.
So you're looking at...
We measured free testosterone.
Free testosterone, and these are kind of... on the low side too. Progesterone is still low, the estradiol. So they're still low in spite of the fact, but she's got that sex hormone binding globulin that needs to be addressed.
Yeah.
So I would start doing some research on that, and I'll pull out what I found about that. There was some link with dementia and other sorts of neurologic stuff and sex hormone binding globulin. And there was some other, I'm drawing a blank right now as to where that connection was, but that's something to look into because that's tying up her hormones.
One of the things that I've heard, just to remember, is a boron deficiency. Someone sent me a link about this. I'll see if I can find a research paper on boron being helpful to reduce.
Yep. And that's certainly easy and safe and easy to do.
So you would monitor the hormones if when I'm doing all the stuff, you'd measure monitor it through the Dutch, would you, rather than the bloods?
You know, that's my preference. I mean, there are plenty of bioidentical docs that do blood too. So it's just my preference. I know David Brownstein does blood. Jonathan Wright is a big fan of the urine. So, you know, I think you can get numbers, you can get an idea, certainly. But
yeah, I've just got to work out the ranges that, because the thing is on the Dutch, I've obviously got an idea of where the postmenopausal ranges are, but in the blood at the moment, I'm guessing because I don't know what the functional ranges are for.
Check Meridian Valley site and see if they have anything posted there. Check Dr. Brownstein's site to see if he has anything posted there as far as that. And Karazian, Karazian had it, I would have put them in because I did, I used a lot of his functional ranges.
Yeah. But the progesterone correlated well. That was one of the interesting things. On the Dutch, they actually give the serum equivalent, which is quite interesting. So the serum equivalent was 0.8, and in the bloods, it was 0.88. So pretty close.
Okay. So that's pretty close. Yeah, that's pretty darn close. And her pregnenolone is obviously low. So you can be feel very comfortable given her the pregnenolone.
Very good. Thank you. I know I've taken up a huge amount of time, so apologies.
You're welcome. Hopefully this was really helpful for people.
Let me hand back over the presenter role. Thank you very much for that. Much
appreciated. You're
welcome.
Sure.
There you go.
That was Jamie. Was that helpful? Did anybody find that not helpful? The more you get exposed to tests like that, and I know those of you who are in insulin IRSPG, maybe that's beyond the scope of what you're studying right now, but it's always, you're going to see patients with this stuff, and it's good to get yourself exposed to it. While I'm looking for other hands to come up, I'm going to do the questions that came in. There were two people that submitted questions in advance, and I'll go through them. One was from Britt. I think she's over in Japan or someplace far away. So her question is about the insulin resistance. She says, would you advise if I should work my way through Beforebegon before starting the INE course? I'm not certified in the blah, blah, blah. It's new to me. I've printed all the information out and I'm working my way through. Yeah, so what I would recommend and the way we laid it out is that if you go through module by module, you can go through the Beforebegon module, you can go through the IRSPT module. And what that does is gives you an idea of what we're teaching and the foundations for the clients, and then you can go into it from a practitioner perspective, and you can go through it one by one by one. Okay. So as opposed to going through the entire Before Be Gone program and then going back, you might forget some of the things as you go along. So that way you can go through the nutrition piece and then the corresponding thing. And to make that easier for you to do, what we did was we put links on in each section for the insulin resistance program back to the before program. And that way you do it. And that's what I highly recommend that everybody does as they go through. And then Dort from Denmark says, thanks for an extremely interesting and helpful program. It just started and has some questions. I have a client aged 65, diagnosed with type 2 diabetes for 10 years. He's insulin resistant, diabetes in the family, and he's currently on three different type 2 diabetes medications. He wants to get off the medication, but the doctor keeps telling him he wants to increase dose and put him on insulin injections. How would you approach this stubborn doctor like this? Okay, so first of all, the way that you approach a doctor like that is you help the person get results. And here's the deal. When somebody's on three medications, if his fasting glucose isn't coming down, if his A1C isn't coming down, this is a case where I may want to make sure that this is truly type 2 diabetes and not an instance of LADA, latent autoimmune diabetes in adulthood. Because I've had cases like this where they're on three medications, you should be seeing them get better. And then the doc wants to put them on insulin. You generally want to do some things. So there are some things I would definitely recommend doing. One, do his fasting insulin. If his fasting insulin is low, chances are good that he's in an autoimmune state and it's not a type 2 diabetes, but it's been misdiagnosed. It oftentimes happens, very often happens, especially when there's a family history. So approaching the doctor is you get results. He doesn't convince the doctor. He gets results. And if he truly is a type 2 diabetic and he hasn't gone into pancreatic failure, then you should be able to see results with the approaches that we're teaching you very quickly, sometimes in the matter of days. Okay? So it looks like he started homeopathy to decrease A1C since November of last year. It decreased from 76 to 71, which I don't know what that equivalent would be, but according to, it's still high according to the range. So she did the interpretation. So I don't know how high that is because I think in terms of our U.S. numbers, but it's come down for sure. He's now done the blood sugar tracking for 2 weeks, and we have some questions. So, okay, before I finish with that and go to those questions, get a fasting insulin and then see where that's at. If that fasting insulin is indeed high, like you would expect in an uncontrolled type 2 diabetic, I would expect to see that fasting insulin is going to be high. I like to see it around 3. Typically, we're going to see it, you know, in the range of 10 or higher in somebody who's truly a type 2 for this long. So if that's low, like say that's 3 or even 1, I'm getting suspicious that this might not be a type 2. Then I would look at getting any one or all of the following tests, which are listed in your assessments module for the blood sugar balancing. One would be insulin antibodies. So these are antibodies that are attacking the person's own insulin. Definitely, if the insulin is low, that's one to get. Auto antibodies for the pancreatic beta cells. That's the antibodies that attack the pancreas where it's making the insulin. So those are two autoantibodies. The other one is C-peptide, which gives us a sense of how well controlled the glucose is and the reserves are of the pancreas. And number 4 would be something called GAD antibodies, glutamic acid decarboxylase. And that can be measured. That is an enzyme that actually converts glutamate to GABA, and it's produced by the pancreas. So you don't necessarily have to get all of those tests, but I would, you know, depending on the person's budget, could run about $600 U.S. to get all of them run. So start with the fasting insulin. Then I would look at antibodies next, and then I would start to look at the others as well. If any of those 4 are elevated, it's a good chance that there is a latent autoimmune diabetes going on. And you want to make sure, because you're going to treat it differently, you're going to treat it like autoimmune. Now, if he doesn't have the budget or the doctor won't run them, like here we could just go to Direct Labs and get them run. There, I don't know what the story is. If you can't get them run for budget reasons or doctor reasons, then I would approach it as if it's autoimmune. I would totally approach it and add some autoimmune approaches to that. So here's some other things. His blood sugar in the morning is elevated. It's a 9.4, and at night when he went to bed is 7.1. Those are both still elevated. I think 5 point something is the normal within that scope, within that range. It's like the equivalent of our 85 would be 5 point something. So it's definitely elevated in both ways, but it's at 7 and then it goes up overnight. Whenever anybody's blood sugar goes up overnight, well, the first thing I ask is about, are they eating close to bedtime and causing the insulin to go up high and then get really low blood sugar in the middle of the night, which causes a spike, and that I don't think that's happening here because he never eats in the evening and night. Number two is if there's a stress going on in the middle of the night. If he's not sleeping well, waking up a lot, if he's had a stressful thing that's happened in the past, sometimes people who have had molestation happen or parents fighting in the middle of the night or a break-in, anything that makes them feel unsafe and they're not able to sleep well, they could be jolting up and the blood sugar goes up because of the cortisol going up. So I'd look at that. You can also get a cortisol test to see what his cortisols are at bedtime and through the night. It could be parasites. That's another thing that can cause the blood sugar to go up overnight. Parasites become active overnight and often cause a raise in the blood sugar. So those are a couple of possibilities. Number two, we notice that when he eats a boiled egg or SKYR, an Icelandic type of curd, very rich in protein, and almonds, his tracking shows a decline in glucose. Why is that? Well, generally speaking, there are some foods that cause an increase in the sensitivity to insulin and would cause it to go down. But there are also some high protein foods that cause a spike in insulin, which causes it to go down. The fact that this is happening makes me even more suspicious about there being a LADA type of a diabetes as opposed to a true type 2, which is insulin resistance. Because something that would cause an elevation in insulin, if he's not insulin resistant, could cause a drop rather rapidly. So again, now, another thing I would look at is, has he done an elimination diet? Because these are two foods that I would be eliminating because of, you know, potential for food allergy and inflammation and all that. So I would look at our recommendations when you get to the nutrition module about how do we put this person on an elimination diet and really clean up the diet. So I don't know yet what this person's eating, so I'd have to, you know, I'm only guessing that, you know, it's kind of what the doctor told him versus what, you know, you're going to tell him after this. So I would say that he does need to be much more strict about his food, getting rid of the gluten and dairy, especially if there's an autoimmune. Those can be triggers for autoantibodies. So I'd be really careful there. Should he try to eat two pieces of chocolate, but his glucose didn't increase? Why? Well, it depends on what kind of chocolate. The chocolate has a lot of fat in it. It could cause it not to go up. It could have been a low sugar type of a chocolate. It could have been a chocolate that was not sweetened with a conventional sweetener. So that's the thing. Should he be eating that as a type 2 diabetic who's not in control? No. You got to get him careful. If you're feeding him, you know, some 100% cacao that you've blended with some coconut and some lohan or stevia, then that's different than eating a commercial bar. And again, what else is in that bar? Where do I find these data in your – yeah, so anything related to the foods are all in the nutrition module, which I think is part 4. Yeah. And then whenever you're looking for anything in the insulin resistance program or any of our programs, we always have this download page where all the different things from all the different pages are in one place so that you can download them to your own library. Positives about his glucose tracking is that he can see his fasting and postprandial glucose are beginning to stabilize. That's great. And his A1C is on the decline. Your excellent insight into HD triglycerides index is also on the decline. Excellent. Finally, as mentioned before, A1C reduced. So that's very good. Yeah, so I would look at these things that we just mentioned. Few guidelines, few questions. You mentioned somewhere, where you can do an A1C test at home. You're unwilling to buy those strips in Denmark. Yeah, because here you can buy them at a pharmacy like a Walgreens or whatever. You can go to Amazon. So I would do a search on Amazon for hemoglobin A1C strips. That's where we found them. I'm sure that, Lynn, if you can come up with that link, you might be able to send it to her. But I believe we have it also on the site in the testing page where you can buy them. But you may or may not be able to get them shipped over there. The good news for all of you guys overseas is we are right now, and I just worked with Scott today to try to figure out which one we're going to offer. There are some kits that we can actually order in volume, give them to a fulfillment house, and then offer to you guys to be able to ship them to you. And our fulfillment house will ship them because Amazon doesn't necessarily ship overseas from an American account. So we will buy them, we will stock them at our fulfillment house, and then we will send them out to you. So that way, you'll be able to get at a very economical rate the meters and the strips. And I want him to set it up so that we have both the meters and then a set of replacement strips so that you guys can get that more easily. And our fulfillment house is pretty reasonable in terms of their shipments, their overseas shipments. But I certainly would recommend that you stock up so that you don't only have to pay the shipping fee once. So that's coming soon. I can certainly look into the A1C test. I'm not sure how that would fly. Those are expensive, but they don't cost any less, in other words, to do them with the kits versus do them to direct labs. So here in the States, I usually just have people go and get their blood drawn to do it just because it's easy to make mistakes with those strips. I've screwed them up a few times because you have to really carefully follow the instructions, and I hate to see people wasting their money like I did. So we'll look into that and let you know about that part. But in the meantime, Lynn, if you can just send her the link, I believe it's in the nutrition on the assessment module. Would it be possible to get your presentation in PowerPoint? Now, if you're talking, Dory, about the presentation, that's the presentation in a box that we have as a bonus. Absolutely, it's in. We do give it to you in PowerPoint format, so then you can change that. So we do give it to you that way. If you're having any trouble at all with finding that, just reach out to Lynn. Facebook would be a good place, and she could post it so the whole group will have access to that. And that's a good place for you to post it, assuming Dory's on Facebook. Dorte. And then I haven't started my own tracking, just got my equipment. Great. Is it okay to start now? Absolutely. Start any time. It's always good to start. And can I start new clients up as well? Absolutely. Get them started on it as best you can. Absolutely. There's no time like now to start. Oh, and how do I upload my client's glucose tracking for you to see? Again, I think we can post that on Facebook, but there's a link when you log into the site under support, right, Lynn? I'm going to look to see if Lynn can respond to me. It's under support. I believe it's under support. Lynn can post that in the chat, whether it is. Oh, look at that. Lynn just had a link to some UK test strips. Perfect. Yeah, so if you can let people know where to upload, it's basically, I believe it's the support, and then one of the things says upload or file uploader, and that's where you would upload your tracking. And then on the next call, we can take a look at it. Okay? I think we have another IRSPT call next Wednesday, and that's just our IRSPT. Okie dokie. So we have another question from Ghislaine. Hi, Ghislaine.
Hi. Hi.
Hey.
I'm Gila.
I talked to you in a long time. Gila. Gila. Hi, Gila.
Hey. How are you?
I'm wonderful. Thank you. How about you?
Yeah, good. You know, I wanted to see you in Toronto, but it didn't happen, so I'm so sad about that.
Yeah. Bummer. Yeah, but that's still a long way for you to go. It's probably further for you to get to Toronto than for me to get to Toronto because you have to go cross country.
Yes. Yeah, I wanted to go see my family at the same time, but I'm too busy. But another time for sure. another
good.
Time.
Good.
Yeah. Okay, so I have a question about a client who has thyroid. A thyroid is 5.57, so that's the TSH. Mm-hmm. And she's not on, she doesn't want to take thyroid medication. She said she took it a few years back and didn't do anything to her. And so she, what do you think about that? 5.57, it's kind of
way too
thyroid.
High. Way too high. You want to see it below 3, ideally, you know, 2 or below, you know, 1.5 to 2 would be ideal. So, yeah, she's definitely got some issues going on, but really what we want to look at is what? What other numbers do you have for her?
Well, what I have T4, free T4. It's 12.3, so this is Canadian. So
how does that convert to mine? No, you have to put it in the converter. I don't know what that – I mean, 12 is way higher.
Yeah, it doesn't work, the converter, all the time, so let's – see what I have here when I put it there. 54. No, it didn't work. Sometimes I put it, the number doesn't work. So
try a different column.
Anyway, it.
Yeah, Lynn, can you take that? What'd you say, 12.1?
What did I see?
12.3. So, Lynn, if you can open up the master tracker. And just open up the international one and put in that 12.3 under free T4 and see what you come up with. Yeah, because I want to see our number, our range that I know of is like, you know, starting at 0.96 up to about 2. So that's a good range. So what do you have for free T3? Do you have free T3?
No, the blood test is an issue for her. Doctor don't want to do it, and then it will cost money. She doesn't want to spend money and all that. She said, oh, la, la. So now she decided to go see a naturopath to see, because the doctor don't want to give her armor. She said, I would try armor as thyroid medication. So what do you think? Should she take thyroid medication?
I don't have enough information to say that. I don't have enough information to say. See, so we only have a partial picture. Do you have antibodies? Does she have Hashimoto's?
No, we don't have antibodies. So,
when in doubt, okay, when you don't have enough information, I would assume that she's got antibodies, that she's got autoimmune going on, because like 90% of people with any kind of low thyroid do. So I would assume that she's got antibodies, and I would start treating it making recommendations. And you have a whole thing in the thyroid module all about how to go through step by step, how to work with somebody with Hashimoto. So I'd be looking at healing a leaky gut, looking for heavy metals, looking at her stress levels, watching her adrenals, but definitely looking at her digestion.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing right now. We're doing that.
Okay, and then you can look at, she doesn't want to do medication, you can look at restorative formulations. Has a really nice couple of thyroid formulations. One is high iodine, the other one is not. Otherwise, they're very similar. And that has some things in there to help with bringing down the antibodies and calming the immune system. And they also have one called T-cell balance as well. That might be a good one for looking at. But right now, you're guessing, right? You're doing the guessing game. Because you don't have the test results. But if you're going to guess that she has antibodies, because it's likely that she has. Guess that she has a T4 to T3 conversion issue, because it's likely that she does. And I would look at that ThyroCare from, I don't know about her iodine, and I wouldn't risk it. So I'd get the ThyroCare that doesn't have that, and the T-cell balance, and see if that helps her. That'll give you some clues. But, right, we don't really have enough information to make a thorough root cause analysis, but we can, you know, we can kind of guess. So if you download in the thyroid, the Thyroid Revive and Thrive program, the client one, there's a really nice document. It's probably 20 pages long or maybe longer, and it's called the Thyroid Protocols. I call it the Thyroid Balancing Step by Step. And it just goes through, well, assume they have thyroid resistance, assume everybody has thyroid resistance, look at the things that cause thyroid resistance. Does she have high homocysteine? Does she have low vitamin A? If you don't have, you know, a genetic test to know if she has the markers for low vitamin A, just assume she does and give her a drop a day of a liquid vitamin A just to cover your bases. Can't hurt, right? Get her homocysteine balanced. So that means looking at her B6, B12, folate, looking at an anti-inflammatory diet, which you know how to do really well. Okay,
yeah.
Looking at healing leaky
gut. Her diet is very good, but it might be her work. She's a nurse and she works around the clock.
Yeah, so she's got the stress of that, right? So
yes,
it's really
exactly.
Looking at balancing that, because that affects the receptors, that affects the conversion. So I would get that thyroid balancing step-by-step document. It's in the last part of the Thyroid Revive and Thrive program. And just take her through that. Just take her through it. What can you be doing? What is she currently doing? Sounds like she's cleaned up her diet. She's probably off of the gluten, dairy, sugar, hopefully.
Yes.
I'd look at balancing her blood sugar, because if her blood sugar is out of balance.
Yes, her blood sugar is good.
Her blood sugar is good, and you've done her postprandials and everything, not just her.
Yes, we did it, and it was
perfect.
Good.
Okay. Yeah, so I would work at the leaky gut. I would work at inflammation. I would work at, if you don't already have a homocysteine, which most of the doctors don't want to run, then assume she has high homocysteine and work with it. I would just assume it. All right? And then work at supporting her liver, supporting
No taking armor or things like that.
Well, that you can't tell her to do that, right? So if you want her to, but I don't see that we have enough information. It certainly can help temporarily.
Yeah, I cannot tell her that. Okay?
No, you can't tell her that, but you can introduce her to Restorative Formulations, and they will ship to Canada. Go to restorativeformulations.com. They will, if you don't already have an account with them, they do require that you have an account. You can use mine. Or we made arrangements with them to be able to set you guys up with accounts. So you can just get in touch with Lynn and she'll let you know how to set up your own account there. But in the meantime, you can order stuff using my account and you just need to know my account number. And if you want to write this down, you can.
Okay, so it's restorativeformulations.com.
Restorativeformulations.com. Yep.
Okay, so what is your number?
It's 512-349-9677.
Okay, 512-349-9677.
Yep. And it'll ask you to make an account. You can order it for her. You can give her that number and have her order it.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Sounds good. Okay.
Okay. Great.
Thank you very much.
You're very welcome. Bye.
Okay. Bye.
You know, this is what Gila and Gila brings up is a very common problem, a common situation, because, now my mouse isn't working to turn her mic off. Interesting. Because a lot of doctors are not going to be cooperative, right? They don't want to run the test. They don't understand it. Most of them have no clue really how the thyroid works. They were taught in medical school, if the TSH is high, you put the person on Synthroid. Done. Don't test the antibodies. Don't deal with possible autoimmune. Don't deal with possible leaky gut and heavy metal poisoning. Don't deal with conversion issues. Just give them that. And if that they don't respond, then you put them on Prozac or constipation medication, or you treat the symptoms. And it's just not the way it goes, right? So it's really important. And whether you're working with thyroid or adrenals or you're working with blood sugar, it's hard to get them to run, like the hemoglobin A1C and the homocysteine and these tests that are functional tests that help us to see what's really going on, right? In our NEPT program, which is what Gila is in, we have this whole spreadsheet and we really help you to be able to look at that from all perspectives. And the thyroid program, for those of you who are practitioners but haven't been through that before, right now, we're running a special on our Thyroid Revive and Thrive program. It is a program for the consumers, but it's a great place for you to start. We will probably next year or the end of this year have a practitioner thyroid program available, but right now it's not. But starting with that consumer program, you're going to learn a lot. I teach it from a perspective of very sophisticated. So you're welcome to go out there, and there is a coupon code to give you $100 off. And we sent an email out about that on Monday. And if Lynn, if you know what that coupon code is, go ahead and put it in and the thing in there, because there are a few people on here who are not in NEPT. Those in NEPT, of course, you get it all. So let me look to see if there's any questions that have been typed in. Oh, yeah, look at that. Amina says, when I try to join the screen share, it asks what the meeting code is. The meeting code is Dr. Rita Marie. That should have been in the thing. Dr. Rita Marie is the meeting code. Yeah, so you can, Amina asks about asking a question. *2, not *2. So *2 on the phone, that will raise your hand. Absolutely. Jean, I'm on my iPhone, not sure how to get to the screen share. I can see the chat box. So you can see the chat box for the Instant Tele Seminar. Here's the deal. On the iPhone, there is an app, and it's called Join Me. So if you download the Join Me app, it really, I think it works for screen share as well. Not 100% sure. I've done it on my iPad, but I've not done it on my iPhone for the screen share. And the Join Me link is in the email. Yeah, so we shouldn't take that out, Lynn. We'll just leave it in there, but say just for screen share, not chat. And we probably could add that as one of the buttons on these calls. So if you could make a note of that, Lynn, to let Jazzy know when she sets these up, that she could add one of those links that they click to that would say the Join Me, and it would have the Join Me they could just click to. But again, if you're on an iPad or an iPhone, then you'd have to download the app. You don't get the same level of web access in terms of screen shares just because of some of the way that those phones are set up. Okay, so let me refresh it and see if there's any others. Yeah, that's it. Conference, *2. So who do I have? Wireless caller Modesto. That must be Jane. Is that Jane?
Jane.
Oh, there
that's
you go.
Jane.
Hi.
question, just, I hope that this is probably a quick question and has to do with vitamin D. I was hearing, and I must have missed a call on this, but I was hearing someone say that we should keep the D separate from the K, take it at separate times of the day. Is that true?
Sure. They work synergistically, so I don't usually take them separately. They do kind of.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay, I was hearing, a question came up actually in ERC, and I'm like, I don't remember hearing that on any of the calls.
You know
and
what
I
you might
take
have,
them together.
I usually take them together as well. And the thing they might have heard, because you know how things like, it's like playing a game of telephone.
Yeah.
Right? And what did she really say? Oh, it didn't have anything to do with that. Is that I've said sometimes if someone is really low in D, you don't want to take a DK supplement to get enough of the D, that you would take the K separately from the D so that you can take the appropriate lower amount of K and the appropriate higher amount of D. So that might have been what they heard. And then they interpret that.
But
that's what they heard.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
For maintenance,
I was like, oh, that's new to me.
Yeah, no, that's not. I've never heard of that. Oh. If that's soluble, synergistically, yeah. That's probably what they heard.
Great. Thank you for clarifying.
You're very welcome. Thank you. All right. Any more questions? I'm going to look at the chat to see if anybody's been – I know Lynn's been given stuff in the chat. Brit is in Hong Kong. I knew it was somewhere in the east. Progesterone and estriol cream be used – good question. You know, this person is menopausal, so – and when I'm having people do progesterone supplementation, I usually do stick to mimicking nature and have them start at, you know, just randomly say my cycle started on day one of the month, and then on day 10 they would start their progesterone. So it's a good question. If you're doing that cream together, should you start then? It depends on the level of progesterone. That's a very good question. Yeah, because usually I would do estriol throughout the month just to try to get the levels up. And I usually, if I'm doing if they're doing bioidentical estrogen, like if they're doing an 80-20 biased, I would have them do that on days 1 through 10. And then, I would have them go through the month, 1 through 26, and then stop at day 26, and then the progesterone we'd start at day 10. It depends on how high the dose is in there. If it's a very small dose of progesterone, then I would just stick with, just take it all through the month, or you can get them to have a separate supplement that they take at the beginning part. So you might get the straight estriol that they'll take the first 10 days, and then days 10 to 26, they would take the combination, and then days 26 through the end of the month, they do nothing, and then they'd start again. So you kind of try to mimic nature with the cycle. Let's see. Good. Zain posted the uploader link on the chat, so. Oh, thank you, Jamie. Jamie converted Gila's number to, it's 0.95. So she's got low free T4. So that's saying that she's, you know, when you look at thyroid, you're looking at the supply versus what's available to the tissue. The supply would be how is the thyroid working. With a free T4, we still don't know 100% that what's going on with the thyroid, but definitely 0.95 is low. The lowest I like to see it is 0.98, 0.98 to I think 1.6 or 5. So supply wise, she's probably low, but you can't always tell because total T4 is what the thyroid produces. Free T4 is that small fraction of active. So sometimes you could have a low amount of total T4 and have an adequate amount of free T4 because we've got lower amount of the binding globulin. So it gets kind of complicated, which is why I recommend that you go through that thyroid class and learn all the nuances of how that works. Yeah, so 12.3 in SI units converts to 9.4 in US. And Sequoia, thank you for pointing it out, Gila. You can actually, you have access to the blood chem software. So if you put all those numbers, just don't do this in the dark. Put all your numbers in the blood chem software. Blood chem software, for those of you just in IRSPT, is something that we offer to people in the tier NEPT certification. And they actually get access to this really cool software that converts everything for them. Let's see. This is a good point that Lynn brings up, is that the vitamin D toxicity is rare, but it can be caused by a K deficiency. So it is a good idea to take that together. Okay. Let me look to see if she has anything in the other chat. We have two chats going on now. She posted some links to the Biomatrix supplements that I was talking with Jamie about. She posted a link to the Dutch test. You soon will be able to get the Dutch test on our site if you can't make an account with them directly. If you can, then great. You can get them at a reduced price. We're putting up we get a reduced price from them on the Dutch test, so we're passing, you know, most of that on. We have to, of course, charge for our labor in getting it all set up, but you'll get a much better price. I think we're charging $290 for the Dutch Complete, whereas on their website it's $399. she should be able to order it through us soon. Yeah. Oh, it's not ready for purchase. Her stuff, and Dr. Kabeka sent me a sample of her cream, her Vulva Cosmetic cream. So I guess it's not ready for purchase yet. It should be soon, though. What newsletter? I'm looking. I thought it was in the last. No, we didn't have it in the last. We had her program. She has a Magic Menopause. She was having a webinar, and she has a Magic Menopause program. But I don't think, I guess she hasn't, doesn't have it ready. You know, whenever you're making your own formulations of anything, and there's so much FDA stuff that you have to go through, and she's been dedicated. She used to have a vaginal DHEA tablet that was working phenomenally for women with vaginal atrophy and dryness and painful intercourse. And they made her take it off the market because it was considered a drug because it was DHEA used inside of an orifice versus orally. So, go figure. Wonder if it can be purchased in Canada. Do you mean Sequoia purchased in Canada? Do you mean the Magic Menopause or do you mean the Dutch test? Okie dokie, let me see. And it's new cream. Yeah. I don't know how she's working that. I'm going to have a conversation with her soon. I'll ask her. Okay. And she's speaking at Shine, by the way, guys. And Dr. Kabeka is coming to speak at Shine, so you can get all the scoop on that. So I'm hoping that she can bring some with her so that anybody that comes from across the borders can get it easily. So I will talk to her about that as well. Yeah, so any more questions? Raise your hand, star two. Raise your, I'm just going to ask a question. I'll put your hands down after this. Who in here is just in the insulin resistance program? Go ahead and do a star two. So I'm looking, Sequoia. I think June might be. June from Pacific Grove. Patty from Virginia. I think that's Patty. That's our Patty, right? And Joan from Raleigh might be. There's a cell phone in Texas. Quero, Texas. That's Glenn, Jamie, Tony, Valerie, and Lynn. Laura, Farah, Sequoia, Jane. Okay. Guess not. All right. So it doesn't look like any more questions. Star two. I know that someone had said, how do we do it? Let me look back at my questions to make sure I don't miss it. It was Amina, Love of Healing. I love that Gmail, A-A-M-I-N-A. And then there's Jean who's listening in and Jill. So I don't know how many people are on the webcast that I don't see on my phone. Looks like a bunch. So, all right. Well, if you have any questions, last chance, or type them in. Oh, Jolva, is that what she ended up the name of it? She was, you know, we were going back and forth once on what should she name it. There's actually a cream called Vital Vulva that is a vaginal lubricant type cream, not a sexual lubricant, but a, you know, vaginal atrophy type cream. She thought that was a cool name, but Jolva, interesting. Very interesting. I don't see any others. I'm going to do a refresh. I am. Amina, do you mean you're on the phone? If I know who you are on the phone, I can open you, like what you would, because your name is not there. I see June. So tell me who you are. I see June and Joan. Tell me where you're from and who you are, and I can open up your line if you're having trouble. Star two will do it. Okay. Let me look again at the chat. Oh, I'm only in the introduction module. Great. Super. Yes, star two will do it. Oh, so you want me to open you up, June? Okay. Yeah, if you're on the chat and it doesn't seem to be showing me your star two, just do a star two on here and I'll open you up. So, June, I see you. There you go. Hi, June. I can hear something, so you're there. So go ahead and speak.
Oh, I can speak?
Ah, there you go. Hi.
Oh, I can talk?
Yes, you can.
How lovely.
Yes. The wonders of technology, eh?
Well, I'm in your insulin resistance program, mm-hmm. and I'm a novic. I don't really have any more time to spend on the computer right now as I have to go pick up my car. But I did want to get connected somehow and get started, and I have no idea how to do it. What I have gathered from this meeting, a lot of things, but one thing for starting is that I should probably go in and copy the module, and that would be a beginning. And I can see that Lynn is the person that will help when you're not available.
Absolutely. She will help even when I am available, because she's the one to help with any of the how to get it done, how to go through. She's a whiz at that. Okay. If you're not like one of these people who is like a computer's or your second language, then no. Sometimes it can be intimidated. It's actually quite simple once you know where to start. So she could help you get started, but basically you log in with your user ID. Downloading the modules is not absolutely necessary. You can sit at the computer if you want, but you can download even the MP4s, the videos, to your own computer so you can not be connected to the internet. But it is, and if you prefer transcripts and audios, you could take the audios, whoops, and put it on your phone and then download the transcript and read the transcript. So there's a lot of ways to begin, and Lynn can certainly help you with that.
Well, I'm a digital idiot, Lynn. And a very determined woman.
I'm glad. Yes. So it is pretty straightforward once you get started. But if you are not a digital whiz kid, you know, that you love the computer and you're at home with the computer, it can be intimidated to get started with any online program. So okay. She can help you with that. So, Rita, are you on Facebook?
Reluctantly.
Reluctantly. Yeah, because there's ways to do it on Facebook as well. There's ways to do it with screen shares, and there's ways to do it where you're sitting at your computer, she's sitting at hers, and she can just tell you what to press. And once you're in, you're good.
Okay. I'm also on a new computer and a new program, so this is really a learning curve.
Okay.
And I'm a senior. This is not a good combination, but I'm telling
you. No, it's a great combination. What does it mean to be a senior? How old are you, June?
And I've lived longer than my mother.
You've lived longer than your mother. I've lived longer than my mother, too.
I love it. My dad died at 41, and I'm just so thrilled that he has five children that are all 65 and older.
Great. So I love it. In our family, we celebrate when we all celebrate when we hit 57, because my mother died at 56. So I have four sisters, four sisters so far that have made it there. And
Yeah,
so we get excited. My dad made it to 62, I think. So my brothers have a little bit, and they're the youngest. So my brothers have a little bit of that place. But yeah, we celebrate that because you just keep making efforts. So I would never consider myself a senior. Probably even if I was 95, I would never call myself that, but that's just my way of being. I still consider myself young. I haven't hit middle age yet.
I consider myself crazy. I'm not sure about anything else. So
crazy. Good. We have to be a little crazy to make it in this world. So good for you. I'm really glad you're here, and I'm really glad you're making the effort in spite of those obstacles. You're just saying, no, I want to learn this stuff in spite of. So just really congratulations to you.
Thank you.
Lynn will set up a time to help you through it. Okay.
I appreciate that.
Sure. No problem. Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You're welcome. All right. So Q&A. Okay. Anybody else there? Let me go to the chat. I cringe when I hear senior. Me too, Sequoia. Somebody was creating a program that they focus on people who are, I think it was Karen Osborne. She said, you know, she wanted to work with seniors. I said, don't use that word, because a lot of us in that, what we would, maybe when I hit 99, we wouldn't relate to it. One of my colleagues was creating a fitness program for women over 50, and she was calling it like midlife something or other. I said, well, I wouldn't relate to that either. You know, it's like, I'm in your target audience, but I would walk away from that because I don't want exercises for old people. I want exercises to keep me young. So anyway, your oldest daughter, Heather. Yeah, go ahead.
We want to become older. And the reason we want to become older is we want to keep living.
That's right. We want to keep growing older, but we don't want to have the attitude of, well, I'm old, so I get to sit in a rocking chair and
watch
the world go by, right?
No, that's definitely not what you want.
No. I want to live life. I want to be out there, and then I'm going to do whatever it takes every single day so that when I'm 70, I'm doing 70 push-ups. When I'm 80, I'm doing 80 push-ups.
Bingo.
Mm-hmm.
My children have outlived my father, so life is good.
Oh, that's awesome.
And I think we really need to look at the fact that just because we're growing older, and I'm disabled, so I'm quite limited, but because we're growing older does not mean we're dying, we're in a rocking chair, we're going blind, we have to do all these things. And I think that's the part we have to change.
Absolutely. It's the mindset. And when we're working with people, we have to realize that I'm going to say this very large number, but I think for most people, it's 80% mindset that's keeping them unwell. And when you can shift that mindset, it facilitates the physical healing. And there are people who do all this great stuff physically, but they don't shift the mindset and they stay locked in a body that's not working for them.
Absolutely. I agree with you. And I think doctors need to have their mindset changed.
Well, big time.
So, anyhow, enough philosophy for today.
Enough, but this is good because that's why we're all here. Personally, that's my mission, is to train as many practitioners as I can so we crowd out that old-fashioned way of thinking that I'm the doctor, you're the patient, here's a prescription, go do it, I can't help you, just prevent yourself from having symptoms as you die. It's horrible, right? We need to change that. And that's why each and every one of us has a place in that. And so I'm just thrilled to have all of you here. Now I'm going to cry. It brings tears to my eyes because we have a huge mission. And I feel like, oh my God, I'm not alone anymore with this. I always felt like I was alone. I was the weird loner that was trying to do this. And to see this and seeing it happening, seeing people demanding now. I mean, I see my sister forwarding things about anti-GMOs. Now, you know, my family has been the last to follow me. And she's like forwarding all this stuff about we deserve health, clean food. And it's wonderful to see. It's so wonderful to see.
Well, if we all stick together and keep moving forward, when people turn 70 and they say, well, it really doesn't matter what I eat.
Yeah.
Needless to say, they're going to get a lecture.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going to be nasty, but it's going to be
empowering, right? It's our job to empower people. I have a client that I work with. She's 86. She reads all the health newsletters. She comes up and says, I'm just going to have to learn more about that. I learned about this herb. I'm going to go every time I tell her, oh, that herb might help. That food might help. She goes and buys a book about it and reads. She signs up for a newsletter about it. She signs up for webinars about it. It's never too late.
I'm laughing over here. I live in a senior building, and they're all looking at me like I'm out of my mind. And I say, hey, what I'm learning, I'll pass on to you, and then you can be bright, too.
Exactly.
And don't walk up to me and say how much you're in pain, because there's nobody in here in more pain, and I don't want to hear about it. Just live life and enjoy it because it's the only one you're going to ever have.
Exactly. Good. And every moment. So great. Thank you for your bright spirit and for all the influence that you will have by example on those people. And you have an impact, even if they're fighting you tooth and nail, because it's their job to fight you tooth and nail because you're bucking everything they've learned from the time they were little. But it's amazing how much we're influencing people, even if we don't even realize that we're influencing them.
Without question.
Yep.
Okay, so I need to go.
Go ahead.
So do I just tomorrow or whenever I can get online into your site and then hook up with either yourself or Lynn?
Yeah, it'll be Lynn for sure. It will be Lynn for sure. She knows more about how to get around the site than I do. You know, I can tell you all the answers, but she can help you navigate. So reach out to her on Facebook and say, hey, Lynn, or Lynn, it's Coach Lynn at DrEdenMarie.com. And just reach out to her and see if you can set up a time that you both can get on at the same time, and she'll set something up with you.
Beautiful. Okay? Thank you, and thank you for being here.
You're so welcome. Thank you for your spirit.
Have a good evening.
You're welcome.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, so that was June, and I think we're done. That will give me 6 minutes before my next call. Any other questions before I jump off and then back on in 6 minutes? Non-alcoholic beer raises blood sugar. Yes, not recommended. It can for a lot of people. It may not for everyone, but it can. You also have to watch for gluten in there, although, you know, on the gluten summit, Dr. Vajani said that he didn't think that beer actually had enough gluten left in it after all the processing, but it could. It certainly can. You have to check, people. You have to check. And if you don't check, then not recommended. Okay, that was that. And then let's see. Oh, Sequoia, you're on the web. Do you have a headset? Let's see. I don't see you here. Let's see. Sequoia, there you are. Let me open you and see if it works. No, you're on web call. You should be able to if you have a headset. Sequoia?
You hear me?
Yeah, I can.
Okay. Hi. I just wanted to add in very quickly, because I know you've got another call. There was about the man in, I think he was from Mexico, and he had no birth certificate, and he was playing with all the young kids. He was playing football or whatever. You know, he was having a very vital life, and then this woman came along and said, I'm going to find out how old you are.
Mm-hmm.
Find your birth certificate, right? Or I'm going to find out what age you are. Anyway, she did her investigation. She came back. She says, you're 55. So what happened? He stopped playing, and he deteriorated. So I just want to bring that to people, you know, the importance of the mind, okay?
What did I just say, 80%? Maybe it's higher. I was being conservative. Absolutely. Absolutely. You and I together, don't ever call me a senior, and we're not going to grow old. We're going to grow younger.
That's right.
And I, you know, stronger and stronger because we learn more and we facilitate it. And I actually looked at my driver's license and I went, I don't want that picture on there anymore. I don't look as good as I do now. I want a new picture on there. And that was 10, 12 years ago. You know, it was more than that. It was 14, 15 years ago. Could be because I was dealing with a baby and on a toddler, and I was tired, and I had bags under my eyes. I don't know, but I'm like, I look younger now than I did then. I want to put that picture on my driver's license. So yeah, growing younger.
Yeah, I'm right with you.
Yes, we're doing it. Aging Backwards is actually a website. I think that's a kind of an exercise thing that Miranda, I forget her last name, but she has. It's called Stretch, Classic Stretch. And I think she has something called Aging Backwards. And I love that. Let's just age backwards. Thanks for sharing that. So mindset, I can share another time a story of a guy that had cancer and, you know, experimental therapy, the whole bit. And once he knew that he wasn't on the real therapy, he died. But while he thought he was on nothing, but he didn't know he was on the placebo, he was thriving until he learned. And then he died. It was really, I mean, the mind has such a big, powerful effect. All right. So I'm going to go. Thank you for sharing, Sequoia. Thank you, June. I think she's already off. Thank you, Jamie, for that great case. And Ghislaine is off again. So I appreciate y'all being here. We have another call next Wednesday night, which will be just insulin resistance. So any of your questions there, bring it. If you've got cases, if you've got labs, upload them. I'll have a look at them, or you can just tell me them, and we'll have a look at them. If you are in a different country and your numbers are not in the U.S., then it would be great if you can convert those numbers, and we give you a converter tool on the site for the glucose anyway. All right. So I'll open up your lines so you can all say goodbye to each other. Thank you again for being here, and have a great rest of the day. Bye-bye now.
Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Bye.
And for those of you in NEPT, don't forget to come tomorrow to our clinical mastery of the digestive system, our finally the long-awaited gut hormones and appetite hormones presentations are going to be tomorrow. So we'll see you then. Talk to you then. Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye-bye.